Gifts for the Poor, Chapter 8. Tzedakah is considered a vow, which means that if someone promises to give tzedakah, to give charity, it's as if he has taken a vow, and all of the rules having to do with vows apply. So if he says he's going to give asela to the poor, he must do so immediately. And if he cannot find any poor people immediately, he must first separate that asela and keep it until he can find someone to give it to. Unless part of his vow is specifically that he will not separate it until he finds someone to give the coin to. He also may stipulate that once the coin is in the hands of a charitable fund, they can exchange it for gold. Second halacha, if someone extends a vow, he is liable for it just like any other extension of a vow. So for example, if he says, this asela coin must go to charity, and then he says, and also this one, the second one would also be set aside. Third halacha, if he pledged to give tzedakah, to give charity, but he doesn't say how much, he keeps on giving until he says, I did not intend to give this much. Fourth halacha, if a person refers to a specific coin and says, I pledge this for tzedakah, he is permitted to exchange it for one of equal value. Once it is given to a charitable fund, it is no longer permissible to exchange it. And here the concern seems to be the appearance of impropriety. Fifth halacha, if it would benefit the poor people for the charity collector to hold the money after he acquires it, then he would be permitted to borrow against it and then pay the funds when they become necessary. In this way, charity is not the same as money dedicated to the Beis HaMikdash, as one is not permitted to benefit from any money dedicated to the Beis HaMikdash. Sixth halacha, if somebody donates a menorah, that is a candelabra, to a synagogue, they may not exchange it, but if it was for the purpose of a mitzvah, it is permitted to exchange it. And this is true even if the original item was called by the name of the donor. So, Reuven's menorah, for example. Something that's not related to mitzvah use, one would be permitted to exchange it if the name of the donor is no longer associated with it. Seventh halacha. The prior halacha is specifically the case if the donor is a Jew. If, however, the donor is a non-Jew, it is not permitted to exchange it so long as the donor's name is still attached to it. And this is so the donor will not say, I gave this thing to the Jews and they sold it. Ninth halacha. If a non-Jew were to attempt to donate something to the temple treasury, initially we do not accept it. If, however, it was initially accepted, we don't return it to him. Unless it was a very specific thing, like a specific beam, then it would be returned to him. But this is not the case with a synagogue. A synagogue may accept something from a non-Jew even initially, but he would have to explain that he was giving it so that the Jews could do with it what they wanted. Otherwise, he may be trying to give it to God, in which case it would have to be entombed, because one is prohibited from benefiting from anything that is given to God. We also do not accept from non-Jews to build the walls of Jerusalem, nor to make an aqueduct in Jerusalem. Ninth halacha. It is forbidden for a Jew to receive tzedakah from a non-Jew in public, but if he needs the money and he's not able to live on what Jews are giving him, he may do so. And one should not return charity sent by a Gentile king or important public official, because this could jeopardize our relationship with the king. Rather, it would be accepted and then given to the poor in secret. Tenth halacha, pidyon shivuim, that is, releasing captives, comes before providing for the poor and giving them clothing, as there is no greater mitzvah than releasing captives, as captives are always in a state of jeopardy. That is, their lives are constantly in danger. 11th halacha. If people in a city were collecting money in order to build a synagogue, and some other mitzvah purpose came along, they would be permitted to use this money for that purpose. However, if they already purchased materials for building the synagogue, they would not be permitted to sell the materials, unless the purpose was pidyon shivuim, that is, releasing captives. Once the building is built, however, they should not sell it in order to redeem captives, but until that point, they may sell any of the materials for the building to redeem captives. 12th halacha. We do not redeem captives for more than they are worth, because this would train evil people to take Jews captive. We do not aid captives in escaping, because this will train evil people to be even more strict when guarding captives. 13th halacha. If a Jew sells himself and his children to non-Jews to be servants, and they hold him captive, one is permitted to redeem him. If he does it again, one can redeem him again. But after that, one should no longer attempt to redeem him. We would redeem the children after their father's passing, and if they threaten to kill him, we do redeem him in that case. 14th halacha. If a servant who immersed himself in mikvah and accepted the mitzvahs is held captive, he should be redeemed just like any Jew. However, if a captive abandons his faith, even with respect to a single mitzvah, it is forbidden to redeem him. As you can imagine, there's some discussion as to what this means. 15th halacha. Women come before men with regard to clothing, sustenance, and redemption from captivity. However, if they're being held out for transgression, and here obviously we're talking about rape, the man would be redeemed first. 16th halacha. If a male orphan and a female orphan come seeking assistance to get married, we assist the woman first, because her shame is greater, and she should be given no less than 6 1/4 dinar of silver, and to the extent possible, she should be given in accordance with her honor. 17th halacha. If there are many poor people, or many captives, and one is not able to provide for them all, Kehanim come before Levim, Levim come before Yisraelim, Yisraelim come before Chalalim. Chalalim are the children of Kehanim and a person that a Kehan is not permitted to marry. Chalalim over Shtukim, Shtukim over Asufim, and Asufim over Mamzerim. Okay, these last three are all related to the concept of a Mamzer. A Mamzer is someone who is born of an illicit union, and Shtukim and Asufim are therefore people who may be Mamzerim but we're not sure. A mamzer comes before a nesin, that is, a descendant of any of the seven nations from Canaan, a nesin before a convert, and a convert over a freed servant. 18th halacha. All of this assumes that they're equal in terms of wisdom, but if there was a mamzer who was a Torah scholar, he would be redeemed over a high priest. And for each individual, one's own father and one's own rabbi is given precedence if they're Torah scholars.